cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around, nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
You're the best around. Turn my mic on. All right. Cat Figure Podcast, episode 33.
Gosh.
All right. Wait, let me start over. Hi. Hello, and I'll do a typical radio voice. Hello, and welcome to Cat Figure Podcast, episode 33. I'm Ryan DiPaolo. And with me, as always, is the wild and wacky Tom McLaughlin. Hi, Tom.
Oh, how you doing, folks?
That's your radio voice?
Oh, I guess so.
Pretty fruity. So, Tom, tell me, who are some historically great number 33s?
So, leading in war, wearing number 33, we have Larry Walker, played for 17 seasons.
I just learned about him last episode, as a matter of fact.
Yes, you did. And the player to play the most years with the number 33 would be Eddie Murray with 21 years, Hall of Famer. And let's add this wrinkle in. Player with the most ridiculous name to wear 33. We have from the 1943 St. Louis Browns, a Bobo Newsome.
You know, that you make fun of it, but that team was a very gritty team. Like, I remember they had a bunch of comebacks, and Bobo was right in the middle of it. He had a great pinch hit appearance against a midget. All right. So, we're in the middle of our Hall of Fame. Look at a little detour. Last time we talked about the Hall of Fame results, Tom went over his ballot of his current Hall of Famers, right? And this episode, we're going to talk about first, Tom made a ballot of five players who are in between their retirement and their five-year eligibility window, right? 5 years out of the game, then you're eligible for the Hall of Fame. He's a ballot of those five players. Then I made a ballot of 10 players who are active who I think will end up in the Hall of Fame. So first, let me guess your ballot before we go over it. I bet it's Jeter, A-Rod, Mariano, maybe David Ortiz, and then somebody I'm forgetting, like who retired recently. I don't know that those. I know those four are probably there. I don't know. You tell me the list.
Well, two of them are there. I didn't include A-Rod and Ortiz because I think their 5 years started like at the end of this season, so I didn't include them because I would assume that they would be in the next grouping. So,
Your list is starting after. Well, then I would have included them. Now they're really in purgatory.
Okay, well, so for good radio, it's better that we don't include them because then we have some more meaningful discussions about players.
I'm sorry, guys.
But yeah, I didn't include A-Rod and Ortiz.
Unbelievable.
So yeah, going through this list, it was interesting that, you know, it seems like the talent coming up in the next couple of years isn't as deep as we've had in the past couple of years. But, you know, as you mentioned, in 2021 or 2022, you'll have Ortiz and A-Rod. But the middle years in between, right, you have the two slam dunks, which are Mariano Rivera and Jeter. But then there were a lot of middling players. So let's kick off the list. And next year, first time on the ballot, will be Chipper Jones. My initial reaction, I guess I kind of just forgot, you know, what a great player he was. His WAR 7 was 46.6. Meaning, you know, about 6.5 wins per year during that peak. He is just a great player, you know, like he was the face of the Braves offensively. Great defender. He played different positions on the diamond. He missed a couple of, you know, something that I brought up in the last episode. He narrowly missed a couple of big, like, landmark numbers. So he had 468 home runs and 26 hits, so he's close to 500, 3,000, respectively. So I'm pretty sure he's going to get in first ballot.
Well, it's up to you, but yes, he'll definitely get in.
So
next,
2019 will be his first year on the ballot. Roy Halladay,
oh,
starting pitcher,
that guy.
Yeah. So he amassed a record of 203 wins to 105 losses, an ERA of 3.38.
That is controversial. That's not a lot of wins.
Pitching, well, that's something we're going to talk about a little bit later, but, you know, the five-man rotation has kind of changed things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
3.38 ERA pitching a majority of his games for the Blue Jays when they were terrible, and he was facing, you know, the Red Sox and Yankees at least half his starts, you know, the AL East. So, WAR 7 of 50.7, which is probably the highest we've had in this kind of like grouping we've talked about.
Well, of pitchers or your five?
Well, even just going back to the players, you know, we talked about last episode, and actually, yes, in this group of players as well, 50.7 WAR 7. So his peak, he was, you know, as we remember, one of the best pitchers in the game, but it was a very high peak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then 2020, first year, I mean, Derek Jeter, I don't really think we need to go that much into it. Going back to 2019, Mariano Rivera, again, don't need to go that much into it. All-time leader in saves with 652.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
One interesting stat, though.
No. Tell me the other name. You already said Mo. Come on.
Well, no, the one interesting stat I was going to tell you that we talked about before was Mariano Rivera, ERA plus, 205 lifetime. So he's in a league totally by himself. Nobody else has touched 200.
Well, he wasn't in MLB?
What?
What league did he play in?
The Mo League.
You know, an interesting factoid about Mariano Rivera that people don't really know. He only threw one pitch. Did you know that?
Sort of.
Yeah. I'm being sarcastic. Okay.
And then, you know, sort of like the fill-in wild card, there were a bunch of players you could pick. I picked Andruw Jones.
Well, I don't think Andruw Jones would appreciate being called a fill-in wild card, Tom.
Well, I'm just saying it's very close between him and then a couple of other players who could have made that spot. It was a very difficult choice. I picked Andruw Jones because I thought out of all of those other fringe players, he had the best peak of any of them. He played center field. He was an unbelievable defender. I think we remember that. His first 10 years of his career, I mean, he was on pace to put up some ridiculous numbers. The latter half of his career was plagued by injury, so that impacted his numbers. I'm not using that as an excuse.
No, it's not an excuse. It is what it is. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but I totally respect anyone who does. All right, so your list is good, except that we'll theoretically just put A-Rod and – well, would you put A-Rod and David Ortiz? You would vote for them, obviously.
Well, I would, yeah.
Okay, so just for the sake of neatness for my list of active players, since both of us didn't include them, but I understand the way we phrased it. So, all right, decent list, Tom. I'll give you an A++, but, you know, it wasn't that great. No, I'm kidding. That was good. All right. So now, like we said last episode, Tom did his list of like a real Hall of Fame ballot, and so now I just wanted to make a list of current players who are. I guess this list is a mix of. Well, no, it's a prediction. It's not necessarily who I would vote in today. You know, when you talk about current active players who could be our Hall of Famers. There's different categories. There's players who are like today are a slam dunk.
Yep.
Then there's like guys who are like for sure on track, and then there's like a total hot take speculative one. And so I guess I'll
Gary Sanchez.
As I go through yeah. Noah Syndergaard. As I go through them, I'll like, you know, it'll be clear who's who. So
I just want to tell you before you start. If Gary Sanchez isn't on the list, you're a bonehead. He had the best 56 games I've ever seen.
Thank you, Tom in Staten Island, for the call. All right. So number one, and this is in the slam dunk today. He could drop dead, and he's a Hall of Famer, is Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
He's a second all-time first baseman in WAR 7 behind Lou Gehrig with 61.6 wins. Like you said, the guys like Bagwell and Tim Raines are all in the mid-40s. And WAR 7, yeah. Just again, is...
High 40s.
Their peak 7 years in their career, their WAR in those 7 years. And
correct.
So like it's like a large... it's like a good-sized window to see how good a player was in his prime.
Right, and it kind of takes out a little bit of that, you know, that factor of a player who just plays for 23 years, even as impressive as that is, they're going to just keep accumulating stats.
Right, right, right. Like
and
a compiler.
My definition of a Hall of Famer lies somewhere in between those two.
Right.
You know,
mine lies actually a little bit in more of the way of like a war 5 or 6 even or something.
Right.
Like
I agree.
In the spectrum, like Craig Biggio, I don't think is a Hall of Famer. He's great, but. And he's an example of a compiler. So anyway, yeah, War 7 addresses that. But all these guys that, like, are top, all the guys on my list who are, like, have a very high War 7 are not much further in just total war overall. Like, you know,
right.
you, a lot of the times, unless you're a rare compiler, your overall career war ranking at your position is close to what your War 7 ranking is.
That makes sense.
So Pujols... But just to give, like, a gauge, like, the guys who got in all have, like, a 40-something War 7. Again, Pujols, 61.6.
That's unbelievable.
Lou Gehrig was 67.7. But Miguel Cabrera's entire career war is 69.6.
Yeah.
Pujols, in his 7 best seasons, 61.6. It's insane.
That's unbelievable.
Miggy's War 7 is 44.6. Like, Albert Pujols was the best player in baseball. He's a 3-time MVP. He finished, like, in the top 5 in MVP, like, 6 times. He's insane. I don't need to say
and
anymore.
And he's currently the leader of active players in war as well. I mean, that kind
with what,
of
like
a little 100? Bit goes without saying. But, yeah, he's at 101.1. He's 36 years old, and he's played 16 years.
And he's still hitting home runs, at least. He's not doing much else, but he's still adding.
His war won't increase, I think, that much, but his counting stats are
So I guess since I've referenced Miggy, I'll skip. I have him 7th on my list, but he's
Miguel Cabrera.
They're both. Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols are both, like, in the top 10 right-handed hitters of all time. Whatever that's – I mean, that's just interesting, but – his career war is higher than at least 10 other first basemen in his position who are in the Hall of Fame or whatever.
Question for you. Do you think that that is purely driven by hitting? In terms of the gap between Pujols and Cabrera, their war 7, right? Do you think that full gap is accounted for in hitting, or do you think it's accounted for a lot in the fielding part of war? I don't expect you to have that answer.
I guess I hadn't thought about it. I think that it's just that Miggy, he had like his 3 triple crown years. Like Albert Pujols had literally 8 years in a row when he could have won the MVP and it wouldn't have been a stupid vote.
Mm-hmm.
Miggy had like 3 of those years when he was like eligible for the MVP, and his other 4 were amazing, all-star,
yep.
But not MVP, not the best player in baseball.
Sure.
Like Albert Pujols was the best player. I don't know. I think it's both, but mostly hitting, even though Miggy's been, what do you think? You think it's fielding?
Well, yeah, I'm just kicking around ideas. I think that
it is
could
a,
have
it
something
is a larger gap
it.
Though than you would think. Like,
no, that's why I'm trying to wrap my head around it because I mean, Miguel Cabrera, you could still make an argument as the best hitter in the game. I wouldn't make that argument, but I mean,
but like
yeah.
Right, but we forget for how this is why I think Albert Pujols is underrated because it's like for how good Miguel Cabrera was, maybe his peak year is better than Pujols' peak year, but Pujols had 6 of the 8 of those years. Like he was so he was the best player in baseball every year for like 6 years.
Does war, I'm trying to remember, does war take into account the field that they play at as well? Because I would consider St. Louis a little bit more of a hitting park than Comerica and Detroit.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I assume it does, but I don't remember. We should
anyway,
I'll find that out
on.
One day. Yeah. Number 2 I had, well, no, number 3, Robinson Cano. He's only 32, so I guess he's more in the... He's in purgatory in terms of the if they ended their career today category versus like they're on track category of Hall of Famers. But he's 7th all time among second basemen in War 7. He's only 32. He's a .307 hitter. Since 2007, his age 24 season through 2016, he hasn't played less than 156 games in a season, which is worth something. He had a top 10 war season in all of baseball last season at age 32, a great rebound season. So he's super on track, but even still, his dominance when he was at his peak was amazing. He's my favorite swing of all time that I've like watched live. And to give a comparison of how valuable his consistency is, like Chase Utley, who's 38, has played only three more games than Cano. And he's 38 to 32. It's insane.
Yeah, that shocked me that Cano was that durable. I kind of just don't even think about that, because you remember, especially in the 2015 season, I mean, his numbers were down for, I would say, two-thirds of a season.
Right, and you forget he's playing every day when he has a parasite, right?
Yeah, he had that parasite, but he still played, so that's worth something. I think he's definitely on track to be a Hall of Famer, and I think if he had stayed in New York, I think he would have been a slam dunk. I think he's a player who, you know, there is a little bit of a West Coast bias, right? Like, I definitely don't stay up all the time to watch the Seattle Mariners game, so he sort of escapes my memory a little bit. But especially, let's think about in the beginning of his career, too. Second base used to be an absolutely putrid across the board. It was like Pedroia, Cano, and Utley, and then everybody else was just garbage. Now it's much more like of a stacked position.
Yeah, we're in a great era, even from going back to Utley and to the first and second year players. This is a great era of second and third basemen.
Yep.
Cano is like his season last year, it was underrated. It was a great bounce back year, and it is probably because of a West Coast bias a little
bit.
And
he's hitting in Safeco Field.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, given he had 39 homers last year. I mean, given his what's it called? Given his maybe not 39, he hit some insane high amount, high 30s. Given his rebound this last year in WAR top 10 in all of baseball and WAR by Fangraphs at least, I think that even given the West Coast bias, the sabermetric trend in voting will get him in for sure. All right, next is Adrian Beltre.
39 home runs. You were right, by the way.
Yes, yeah, me in the past. I shouldn't have doubted myself. He is Beltre's 6th WAR, 7 all-time at third base. He's the 5th WAR overall. He has more career wins added than Chipper Jones.
Second in active WAR.
Second in active WAR amongst players. And he's like, for another just comp, like 12 more wins in his career than Brooks Robinson, like the third baseman who played for the Orioles.
Yep.
Beltre's obviously, we've talked about, he's had a weird profile as a career. I think everybody understands that he's a Hall of Famer, and he's in the category as if he stopped today, he's in the Hall of Fame, obviously, with Pujols.
I agree.
But because he's bounced around teams and his like best years are sort of later in his career, it's a weird case. And he that profile of a player who's like awesome late, you know, I used to think that would make them on the spectrum of compiler, but it's not compiling if you're maybe not MVP caliber, but you're an all-star caliber every year, all right, or second best of your position for a bunch of years in a row. That is equal in value. Say you're second best or third best in baseball at your position for 10 years. Maybe that's equal to being best at your position in baseball for 5 years, right?
Yep.
But it's not equal to being 10th best for 15 years. That's not equal. But like, so he's similar to Beltran, who I also have on this list.
With Beltre, you know, and a couple of things to run through real quick. 5-time Gold Glove winner. He won this past year. 4-time Silver Slugger, and he's actually the active leader in defensive WAR of all positions in baseball, and 3rd offensive WAR. So he's compiled the best defensive WAR stat as well as the 3rd best hitter in all of active players.
That's messed up. Use the word compiled. So Beltran is a similar profile player. He has only 9 All-Star game appearances in 19 years, and again, the reason they're similar is because their success has come with a bunch of different teams. Beltran has been consistent-ish, but his career years are coming in different chunks in different places. But he has like 70 career wins. He's right at the averages of the Hall of Famers, at least for center fielders. Like he's at the average WAR 7, the average career WAR, and he's still really good. Like he's still adding to it, you know. So I put him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he, like, again, he's another one in the category of if they retired today, probably they're in the Hall of Fame. He's the last one I have in that list. Well, maybe one more, but, you know, he's an easier pick for me to put on this list than somebody like, I don't know, Paul Goldschmidt or like Bryce Harper or somebody who are more dominant. Like Bryce Harper's year in 2015 was way, way, way better than Beltran's ever had a year in his life.
Sure.
But Beltran, so it's a safer, easier pick to make, but I still think he's probably worthy. Quickly thoughts.
Well, yeah, I think it'll all be about perception, right? Because you kind of forget when he first burst onto the scene. You forget that he was, you know, an elite defensive center fielder,
right,
who could steal bases.
Who strikes out looking to end the NLCS in 06.
And he has sort of reinvented himself. He's a great hitter, but it'll be interesting to see if they judge him against center fielders or corner outfielders.
Yeah, I know. It's a little not fair of me to, like, make it as center field, but either way, he's contributed that many wins in his career.
I think he should get in.
So then I guess I'll do the last of – he's borderline. This list actually turned out to be 10.5 players. I guess Ichiro has to get in because of just, like – he didn't play his whole career here, obviously, but he's been such a good hitter. I don't like his profile personally as a hitter, like an empty high batting average, but he's so good at what he does. It's like you said in the last episode, if you're the best at X, if X is not a stupid thing, like as long as X isn't triples or like a lefty seventh inning specialist, if X is batting average or something, or the best player to ever come over from Japan, that's worth something. And like Ichiro obviously has been great, and he's still doing it. He's still playing well.
You know, Ichiro, aside from the hitting, he won 10 straight Gold Gloves.
Yeah, I know. I'm a dick. I didn't mention his defense.
And, you know, his Rookie of the Year season, he also won the MVP and the batting title. Yeah, I think he's going
to
get
in. It feels novelty-ish, though. Like the reasoning to put him in is slightly novelty-ish because it's like, oh, he did the Rookie of the Year. You know what I mean? Like, it's not our typical build, but that shouldn't maybe necessarily take away from him.
Well, I think, you know, the thing that he lacks that I think gets an unfair weighting a lot of times for Hall of Fame voting is he just lacks the home runs and, you know, the power hitting, but 10 straight Gold Gloves and, you know, even putting together 3,000 hits when you start your career at age 27 and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think we all know he is a Hall of Famer.
I remember when he got 4,000 hits, quote-unquote, with like 1,200 in Japan, and they were announcing it. I was working
Pete
with
Rose.
Teamsters. Some Teamsters were like, can you believe this? They're saying he got 4,000 hits. That I don't care. That dude, if they're not in baseball, it's worthless. That he could have got the hits in the schoolyard. Like, I'm making them Boston now, but they were very angry about it. All right, next is Mike Trout, right? I guess the rest are... the few more I have are, like, probably going to be. But Mike Trout is obviously historically great. If you didn't need to play 10 years in baseball to be in the Hall of Fame, he would be in if he retired today just on his start alone. His WAR 7 with only 6 seasons is 8th all-time among center fielders. Like,
and he didn't even play. He played 40 games his first year, so it's really like a WAR 5.5. 5.25.
Right, and it's 8th all time. It's amazing. And he obviously is going to jump a ton. And right, that WAR 7 after the next 2 seasons, you could say, is going to be better. I don't even really think it's fun to keep talking about him. He is as long as a catastrophe doesn't happen. If he even contributes 2 wins a year, he's a Hall of Famer.
He is the look at, you know, it's unbelievable. We had that whole episode, but talk about WAR wins above replacement. 2012, 13, 14, 15, and 16. He finished first every single year in the American
right.
League.
Right, and that is the criteria of both of us. We're like, are you the best in baseball? And he's literally, there's no debate. So it's like, it's silly to go on. And so I guess being the best at your position as a criteria makes Clayton Kershaw be on track. You know, he was very low on the WAR list, and he's the only pitcher I have on here, and we'll get to that after when we step back to see the forest from the trees, you know what I'm saying? But he has 3 Cy Youngs. He's already won an MVP. He's the best pitcher in baseball every year the last, like, 5 years. He's also still young. What is he, like, 29? He's
28.
He's absolutely on track to be in the Hall of Fame. And much like Mike Trout, if he died today, he could still maybe get in. Maybe.
I think he would still get in today if he never threw another pitch.
Right. So he's been amazing. Now the two. One
don't
is
forget he won an MVP too.
Yeah, no, I said that. Oh, yeah. Okay. Three Cy Youngs and an MVP. I mean, he's been the best player at his position, or in baseball, you know, in his league, I should say.
In 2014, he was probably the best player in the game, yeah.
Right. So, and even last year, it was like struck out 300 people the last 2 years, or I mean the year before 2015. So anyway, so then I got Chase Utley. It was just like a iffy one, just because like he hasn't played that much, and he's a player who like I said, he's 38. He only played like three less games. He's played three game difference than Cano's 32. He has a higher WAR by two games, though, right? For how good Cano's been, Chase Utley in as many games has won, been worth two more wins. His WAR 7 is ninth among second basemen all time. You know, with worse players than him in that ranking in the Hall of Fame already. And it's like I wrote, it's easy to forget how good he was in his prime. He was amazing, like when the Phillies won the World Series and stuff at second base. He's a player who, like, WAR 5 would, like, serve him better or something like that. I hate him. He broke Ruben Tejada's leg. He's a dickbag, but I got to vote for him.
Yeah, and he, you know, I think that the difference between Cano and Utley, I think Cano is obviously the more impressive offensive player. But just looking at Utley, you know, from 2005 to 2010, he was top 10 in defensive WAR in the National League every single year, and he led it in 1 year. So, you know, I don't think people really fully understand how good he was defensively as well.
Yeah.
Or maybe I didn't understand.
I don't. I mean, I don't. So then lastly, I wanted to have one hot take player. You know, it's hard because it's like you got to be so good. I know this is so
for so long.
Such a stupid point to make. But, yeah, you have to be so good for so long when you look at the average list of, like, the Hall of Famers who are in the Hall of Fame. And that's something awesome about baseball. And so, you know, I went through my head. I was like, who are the recent MVPs? Like, maybe Giancarlo. And instantly, that was no. He's too injury prone. I don't like his profile that much. Maybe, Carlos Correa or somebody like that who has a good position, like, advantage, or Corey Seager. Maybe Noah Syndergaard I thought about, but I took Chris Bryant. He has won Rookie of the Year and an MVP in his first two seasons, right?
Yep.
He's already hit 65 home runs in his first 2 years. In a pitcher's park. He's walked 150 times. The only possible reasoning that he wouldn't be on track is that he didn't start playing until he's 23. A lot of Hall of Famers, maybe even a 1 year difference makes a big difference.
Sure.
If you're talking about, you know, WAR compiling or any other number that compiles, right? You know, he has an OPS of 900, 284 batting, 377, won a World Series already. And what only him, like Dustin Pedroia and some other players, have won Rookie of the Year and then an MVP. So I don't know. It was cool. I wanted to put Bryce Harper also. I thought about it because his 2015 was like the best I've ever seen a player play in one season. But I just can't.
I think he's going to end up getting in. I mean, it's so hard to say, but I think, you know, the one huge positive going for Bryce Harper, aside from the freakish talent, is the fact that I think he started in the major leagues when he was 19.
Yeah, he's 24, and he already has 5 years in baseball, over 100 home runs.
So, yeah, that's interesting. So, I mean, what do you think it would make sense? There were a couple of players just came to mind for me that, you know, weren't on your list. Maybe we could just like run through
them. Yeah, tell me your beefs, bro.
So the one, and this kind of piggybacks on our last point, but Josh Donaldson, I think, is a player who could end up being in that discussion. He didn't start in the majors, you know, really full time until he was 25, but he's basically been a 6-win player each of the last 4 years. And the past 2 years, I think he's been probably the best hitter in the American League.
Right. Well, he's a player that it's harder because, like, obviously he, again, I was referencing a safe choice on this prediction list with Beltran. Someone like Donaldson is very, probably you could say has as good a probability as Chris Bryant because he has more success in baseball already, but he's a harder choice to make, because you have to, you know, it's way easier to project greatness when they win a Rookie of the Year and MVP right away. Josh Donaldson, it's like he's peaking now. Obviously, I agree that he has as good a chance as many players.
Sure.
But it's like a scarier thing to predict because you got to be so good for so long, like we said.
Another player, and it shocked me how young he still is because he's obviously had a bad season this past year, was Felix Hernandez. He's only 30 years old. And, you know, I mean, he was the best pitcher in the American League for a couple of years, or, you know, at least in the discussion. He won a Cy Young. He got a number of MVP votes. And, you know, this may work against him, but, you know, he pitches in a pitcher's park. So, you know, I think if he's able to bounce back, at least even to a certain extent, I think that he's got a chance.
Well, two things. One, there's two things. One, that most of the pitchers, like, I mean, at first I was just sorting by, like, WAR 7 and career WAR rankings. All the pitchers that are active start, like, Clayton Kershaw is the highest at, like, you know, maybe 50th, or Zach Greinke, which sort of surprised me, but... you know, we could talk about how, like, you know, getting wins as a stat itself, also that Hall of Fame voters like, is going to be as consistent. You'll get to that in a minute. But so two things. One, I didn't put Felix in because some good players had to be cut, right? Because
sure.
at any given time, they said that there's average of 31 active Hall of Famers in baseball at any given on the average year. That's probably something more like 23 now, because they're voting less and less players in for every era. But even at 23, I had to make a list of 10. So there are going to be players like Donaldson or Felix, but that I cut off. But I'm afraid that maybe, you know, again, all of this with Donaldson or any of these guys is projecting that they have to stay really good for really long.
Oh, of course.
And after his last year, you know, he and McCutchen, who, like, if they rebound to who they used to be, they're Hall of Famers. But if they don't, and if the recent trend holds up, then they're not. You know what I mean? So Felix, you don't know. I think he probably is a perfect candidate to be able to have a renaissance in his career, like Verlander or somebody else with, like, different stuff. But, you know, that neck tattoo doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame.
One more pitcher who I think is another interesting case is Madison Bumgarner, who's only 26 years old.
He was going to be my hot take. I only wanted to put one hot take player, but he absolutely, if anybody has a chance, they were saying for 300 wins, it could be him because of how many innings he's willing to pitch and how he literally single-handedly won a World Series. So, like, that's worth, in voters' minds, if it's like, all right, this dude needs to win 250 games, right? He can skip the gap and maybe 25 wins. His performance in the World Series is worth that gap, like how good he was.
Yeah, and, you know, taking a step back from, like, digging your head into the numbers, like, what you touched on, you need to be so good and so consistent for such a long period of time. I mean, that guy is literally built like a centaur or like a horse. I mean, he has not been injured at all.
Well, this isn't the sexiest body contest, Tom. No, I'm joking.
No, but
make your pitcher point too after this. But
yeah, definitely. And, you know, that's something that I'm kind of taking into account is, you know, like, you can't 100% forecast injuries, but it's been proven that if players can stay healthy and you can kind of judge from looking at the way they play, their body type, you know, I'm just inclined to believe that Bumgarner is going to be able to stay relatively healthy.
Giancarlo is a centaur, but Giancarlo is a centaur and balls seem to hit him in the face.
Well, he's a player that's been injury prone.
I'm just saying centaur alone doesn't mean you're not injury prone, but
no,
I get your point.
Not.
Bumgarner's track record of consistency and willing to pitch innings is a good candidate. You know, CC Sabathia I thought about, but anyway,
he's borderline.
It's harder with pitchers these days, and I don't know why. Do you have a theory on why I wasn't as excited about pitchers putting on this list than position players?
Well, actually, I do, Ryan.
What?
So, even looking at starting pitchers being voted in recently, you know, a couple of years ago we had Smoltz and Pedro get in, and those two were kind of like, you know, no-brainers. But the trend has been that starting pitchers over time have historically less and less of them have got in.
And Maddox, right? That year too, I think they went together, right? Or Maddox and Glavine.
Maddox
next
and
year.
Glavine.
Yeah, sorry. So go on.
And this is for a number of points, and a lot of it just has to do with, like, you know, the macro level of where baseball's going, right? So if you think about in the 1930s when you had one starting pitcher per team and they pitched every single game, that switched in the 50s. And so, you know, as we've gotten to the point where we are right now, we're starting to vote in players who were truly affected by moving from a 3 to a 4 man and then from a 4 to a 5 man rotation. So fewer opportunities. And you know, this is going to, I think, have a big impact moving forward. I took two players, you know, one who is on the ballot right now, Mike Mussina, who has a lot of traction going his way to get into the Hall but wasn't voted in. And then I looked at Roy Halladay, who will be a first year on the ballot in 2019. So Mike Mussina, and this is just total innings pitched, Mike Mussina, 3,562, whereas Roy Halladay only was able to get 2,749.
Wow.
And Halladay is sort of on the high end too, you know, like he for a lot of years did pitch in a 4-man rotation. You know, other factors, obviously the bullpens have gotten so much better. Starting pitchers are being pulled earlier than they ever were. I just foresee this being an issue going forward, and I hope that the writers are smart enough to at least just take this into consideration, because you know, that idealistic pitcher who has 300 wins, 3,000 strikeouts, that's just not a reality anymore.
I forgot this point. This is a great, great, great point. And you actually, I almost feel stupid now. I forget sometimes that WAR is a counting stat. Like, I was looking at the list of all the players all time at position with their WAR rankings, amongst other things. But I couldn't think of why the pitchers had a lower WAR, the more recent pitchers. And it's literally because for that second I forgot it's a counting stat. And if you pitch less innings, your WAR is lower. So it's going to have to go by, like, how many more strikeouts did Clayton Kershaw have than his peers? How many more? But, like, you know, innings still have to be valuable, but the scale needs to be to your peers who you played against, not to other historical players, right?
Absolutely.
That's a really good point, though. I mean, I think that they're all smart enough to adjust.
Well, I think that they are smart enough to adjust. I think it's just that there's always sort of this lag, right? Because,
oh, you're calling them dumb?
Well, look, you're going to have on the ballot in 2019, you're going to have Roy Halladay, and then you're going to have Mike Mussina. And when you look at their stats in comparison to each other, there's a huge discrepancy. There's always just going to be that lag effect, right?
You mean their counting stats?
Yeah. But, like, you know, the numbers are just going to keep dropping off. And I'm just saying, in an ideal world, we would be able to, like, isolate every variable per year, like what this person is doing in comparison to everyone else. But I think that that just may not happen, and that's why it's becoming harder and harder for starting pitchers to get in.
They may do it like you and your flawed methodology in your amazing rankings, that you compared their WAR 7 to each other, to other eligible guys.
That could
right?
be it.
That's
yeah.
flawed, Tom, if they do what you do. So you heard it here first. Don't do what Tom does. Your brain will explode because you're not as smart, you dummy.
Oh, yes, dummies. And here's another player. Jason Hayward is on track for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, oh my God, I saw that article. Screw him. No, he's not.
33 WAR, 26.
Dude.
Yeah, I know. I'm just...
But I saw that article, I think. It's the same one. They who else? They have Paul Goldschmidt and, like...
I'm just joshing.
Yo, Noah Sinha, I'm just
Chris
joshing.
Chris Sale.
Yo, if we did this list 2 years ago, I'd have Matt Harvey as my hot take. You know what I mean? Instead of... But maybe now... Syndergaard, but except somebody like him, I actually am totally guilty of what you're describing, like a pitcher bias, where it's like I still in my head subconsciously expect, I'm like, man, I don't see how Syndergaard could get such a long epic career, so therefore in my head I'm thinking of these benchmarks that he needs to do it that much for that long, which is just probably not going to happen anymore.
Sure.
So it is more subtle than just people being smart or not, because
exactly.
I'm a genius. And I'm inherently biased, and I'm as smart as it gets. I'm a dumb idiot, but what?
No, the other player I think you missed was Manny Machado.
I didn't miss him. He could eat a dick.
Okay.
No, Manny, whatever. We'll see you in pinstripes in a couple years, right?
Yeah.
How's that Chase Headley contract that you keep defending to me worked out?
I mean, I am not defending it.
Well, just
all.
So everybody knows, Tom really defended it for a couple years.
Well, I still don't think it's a terrible contract. I think he's just an unsexy player, and he's better than a lot of other options at third base.
CC Sabathia, less than we're done, but if he like continues to not suck like he did last year, he could have a case because he was really good for a couple years.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, he is like a great like WAR 4 or something, but you know, anybody can. So that's it, yo. So next week, next episode, we're going to continue our MLB look at with
tweet
the Padres.
Us. Tweet us what other team you want to hear.
Yeah,
about.
And we'll do. And then after that, or actually, fine. Tweet us. Name the team we didn't do. Then after we do them, we'll do the Padres. How's that?
And if you don't tweet us, we're going to do the Padres.
Great threat. Exactly. Tweet us. And then if you don't, you're going to have to hear about the team that cut Tyson Ross and has a 9-man rotation.
And the weird logo.
And
with
Ryan
the Fryer.
Schimpf. Yo, that Fryer is creepy. Did they really do that in the church? Like cut the middle of your hair?
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
He has the middle hair. Oh, it's a new logo, you mean? Whatever.
No, I know what you're talking about. I just didn't realize that the middle of his hair is cut out. It's just so creepy.
All right. So that's all. Thank you, guys.
Bye. And a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History.